98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bigley Blast.
There are all sorts of sports fans in this world. Let me tell you about a most peculiar group. These are the fans who cheer for a particular player, and they fuel their identity by supporting that player at all costs. This is how they believe they're actually helping that player, thereby building an imaginary kinship with the player and the team. And this famously happened in San Francisco with Barry Bonds. Now, when things are going well, this brand of sports fan is also known to lash out at anyone who has been critical, as if the critics don't deserve to fully enjoy the triumphs, as if they didn't show the same kind of commitment when things were going poorly. And DeAndre Ayton has a lot of these fans. One person on Twitter last night even said he's got receipts, he's taking names, and he's going to publish the list very soon. So to all those aboard this clown carousel, listen up. Ayton has had two really good games back-to-back. Chris Paul is most encouraged, but not exactly over the moon. The team was so frustrated with Ayton, they might have been shopping him after last season. And if you don't believe James Jones might want to protect that kind of information, let's not forget, Jamal Crawford? The phone. Anyway, this is not the time to be divisive. This is not the time to argue over whose side you're on or were on. It's a time for all of us to join hands and cross fingers and keep pushing this young man up the mountain to greatness, because it's the pushing that is making this possible, no matter where it's coming from.
Jamal Crawford?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, the phone.
All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. Test drive the ultimate driving machine at the newly renovated Chapman BMW in Chandler, at Chapman BMW on Camelback. You can find them online at chapmanbmw.com.
From what I understand, they look to move him this past summer. So clearly they feel that the time is now for DeAndre.
Yes.
And does he know that? Does he know that? Does he recognize that? Does he understand the gravity of the situation?
Right.
That if he doesn't figure it out, he's going to be playing somewhere else. But, look, I think James Jones has proven a lot. I really do.
Yeah.
And I think you hired the right guy in Monty. The arrow is pointing up for this franchise.
That was the voice of the Cardinals, also ESPN NBA broadcaster Dave Pasch on with Doug and Wolf yesterday. And we discussed what Dave Pasch said on the show yesterday,
mm-hmm.
We both had the same reaction. Hey, hadn't heard that before.
Hadn't heard that before, but entirely plausible, because Pasch is an elite level NBA broadcaster, talks to a lot of people in the game. Right?
I believe that.
It's different than Jared Carlin coming out and cracking the mic and going, hey, you know what? I heard the Suns, somebody in Tucson tells me the Suns were shopping DeAndre Ayton. You go, shut up, Jared! That's what you would do in that situation.
Yesterday, the general manager on this front, James Jones, of the Phoenix Suns, he joined Burns and Gambo, and that became a topic of discussion. Were there rumors? What happened there? Here was James Jones.
I knew you'd ask me that question. You know, I'm in a business where people always want to throw something out there, and I've told our guys before, in this business, you're going to hear this a lot. And typically you hear from people that will tell you that it's happening from sources. And, you know, you can't control that. You know, for us, DeAndre, we drafted him. We have every intention of him continuing to grow and be the player that we expect. So we're happy with DeAndre. There's really not much to say besides, you'd have to ask the guy who said that. But from our side, like, it's just basketball. Continue to play and continue to work to get better.
The way I gauge this, and going back to the discussions we had in the off season, I think a lot of people were on the same page that when you're talking about the Phoenix Suns and their roster moving forward, there was maybe 1.5 untouchable players.
Mm-hmm.
And the one is Devin Booker, and to me, the half was Mikal Bridges.
It was. Yeah,
I don't think
right.
We would have said in real time that, hey, you can't deal DeAndre Ayton.
No.
And that's coming from somebody like me who's been very supportive over the first 2 years of his career. But I, you know, how far those rumors went, it talks, I mean, we don't know the level of that, but I agree with you. Completely plausible there might have been discussions around the league.
Yeah, completely. And listen, I Dave Pasch doesn't speak loosely, and I'm sure Dave Pasch heard it, and that was what he said, and I would think that the Suns, if not initiating talks, would certainly listen. And I've got other news for you here, okay? Here's what I firmly believe. I don't know this, but I firmly believe this. Chris Paul is the one really behind this, and I think Chris Paul pushing DeAndre Ayton, and I give DA a lot of credit for being receptive to this. You know I've said that. He's far better than Kyler Murray in this situation. So I'm happy that this is happening, but it's happening because he's being pushed. It's happening because there are now tension points and pressure points, and they're saying, you got to do this. You can do this. Go do it. We need it. And let's hope it all works. The last two games have been just fabulous to behold. And cause for celebration if they continue. It's going to change the ceiling of this basketball team overnight. But you're kidding yourself. If you don't think that if Chris Paul puts all this time and energy into making DeAndre Ayton better, not because he knows what DeAndre Ayton has to give. He knows. He's been in the league 15 years. He's played with big guys his whole life. He knows who has what. He also knows who's the lost cause. And if it ever got to the point where DeAndre Ayton was just not listening anymore, just throw up his hands and say, you know what? I don't want to be pushed like this. Forget this.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Paul will go to James Jones and say, you need to get this guy out of here. Go call Minnesota. Go get us Carl Anthony Towns. Time's wasting here. And they will do it. If that so the idea of was DeAndre Ayton on the being shopped, it's such a ridiculous thing to say, no, he wasn't. Every GM in the world, everybody, with the exception of a superstar, you take phone calls all the time. It's the job.
Yeah.
And the people, everything in this Suns soup right now, from the 2 years Chris Paul has invested here to Devin Booker's future to a 10-year playoff drought, it's all incumbent, among other things, on DeAndre Ayton taking the step or he will not be here. And that's very clear to me. So this is the new reality, and DeAndre Ayton, to his credit, is responding, and what the Suns are doing is working. And I give nothing but credit to Monty Williams and James Jones for really addressing this issue in as smart as way as possible,
yep.
Bringing in Chris Paul to do all of this dirty work.
Yeah, and when that was even rumored, we talked about what it would do for DeAndre Ayton. We're starting to see the fruits of those labors. 26, 17, and 5 last night. It was the best player on the floor, probably for the second straight game. Here was Devin Booker, who also had a resurgent game last night, talking about the big man turning the page.
I mean, you guys seen it. Like I said, it was some minor adjustments that, you know, we sat down and looked at together. And he was open-ended to listening, and it shows. And he went out there and implemented it in his game. And you know, I think he's finding that it comes a lot easier with what we talked about. But, you know, that's what we need out of him on both ends. You know, outside of the 28 and 17 or 26 and 18, whatever it was, you know, the five blocks, the protecting the paint is what was key for us. I think they scored their first 20 points in the paint. In the second half, it was a different story.
Now, the Cleveland Browns, their fan base had a hashtag going on in the playoffs, hashtag we want more. Mm-hmm. They're out of the playoffs now, so can we borrow that and apply it to the DeAndre Ayton thing? We want hashtag we want more, because Devin Booker kind of said that.
I want to see more. I want to see more, and that's what I told him. You know, I mean, there's probably quotes from, you know, early on in his rookie season where, you know, I told him 16 and 10 is cool. Like, it's cool, but I see 30 and 20 out of you. I think he's turned that page, like I said. And I don't want to keep, you know, talking him up, but he has to keep playing, and he understands that. And that goes for our whole team. You know, we have to stay locked in. It's a long season. You know, there's going to be highs, there's going to be lows, but, you know, keeping that same mentality and approach, you know, the same each time you go out there is what's consistent.
I know
That is fabulous. We had
the discussion on, and you were talking about intensity as opposed to numbers, and you kind of came around on the numbers thing. That's why I do look at the numbers, because mm-hmm. of Devin Booker's quote there. You can't consistently like DeAndre Ayton even going, you know, 75% or less, there'd be those games of 25 and 15, right?
Oh, yeah.
But you can't fake it consistently. That's why the numbers are a gauge on how hard a guy is playing or his intensity level or his want to get better. That's why I, in this particular instance, am so attached to the numbers.
Okay. I am not, because I think there's, as I keep using the word volume, there's a noise level, a decibel meter to some of these performances, and he's on to something right now.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, and Monty Williams said this, if part of what DeAndre Ayton is overcoming is his tendency to want to be a finesse player, to not absorb contact, to not be that aggressive for fear of where it might take you or what it might incite in the opponent, whatever the reason is. Monty Williams made the point that if you start dunking the basketball, people are going to get away from you. You're going to solve your own problem. Shut up, Jared. You're going to solve your own problem by dunking the basketball. People are going to go, I'm not guarding this guy. In the first 2+ years, there have been a lot of guards who have been very comfortable guarding DeAndre Ayton in the post. You're not afraid of him. That's changing. You start dunking on people's heads, they will get out of the way. And DeAndre Ayton is starting to tap into that. That one-handed thing he threw down last night, that I hope he watches that on film and go, that was me? Wow.
Whoa, bro. Like that was that was amazing, bro.
Like that scene in Bull Durham where Nuke throws the pitch. Like, what a pitch. Oh, my God. What did I do?
What did I do? Right. That's exactly right.
I just love that we've played the Chris Paul cuts. We played Devin Booker cuts just now. That whenever they're asked about DeAndre Ayton, it's not like, what a great game, amazing, he was so great. It was always like, yeah, that's what we want to see every time. And they always mention, both of them always mention, yeah, we've been talking to him, we've been telling him, we're going to continue to work with him and talk to him and tell him. It's great.
It's exhausting work, and they've got the one guy who just never stops talking in Chris Paul. This is, again, I don't know how many times I want to I'm going to say this, but it's true. There might be two guys in the NBA built for this job. Jimmy Butler, Chris Paul, there might be a couple others. But in terms of everything that it takes to do this job,
yeah,
Chris Paul's the guy. This is exhausting.
There might be only one guy, really.
It might be.
I don't know if Jimmy Butler, it certainly worked out in Miami, but he'd had his...
Jimmy Butler would just start throwing punches at him eventually.
It also helps that Paul's the point guard.
Well, yeah.
With the ball.
Yeah, who Chris Paul is as a basketball... Vinny knows. He never stops talking.
And people said that. And I was like, yeah, okay, I get it. It's true.
Yes,
never.
It is.
Never stops.
Never.
And here's the other beauty is that Bridges and Cam Johnson have kind of cooled off a little bit from the red hot start where they were carrying the team. And they sort of needed DeAndre Ayton to step up and help win some games, and he has.
Yeah.
We'll see if it can continue tomorrow night against the Denver Nuggets. The Waste Management Phoenix Open returns February 1st through the 7th, and we're giving you the chance to win the Coors Light Silver seats to the Open. Text CHILL to 620-620 for your chance to win. That's CHILL to 620-620.
Not at all. No. I know, look, there's a lot of rumor and speculation, and that just goes with the territory in a very public-facing role. And it's true of commissioners in other leagues as well. So it goes with the territory. I've been in commissioner roles for a couple of decades now at the Pac-12 and before, so I understand it goes with the territory. But no, it has not been a factor at all in my ongoing work for the Pac-12 and my relationship with our board.
That's Larry Scott's voice on this very show back on October 8th of last year. The question you posed to him, Dan Bickley, do you feel like he has lost the support of his bosses? And he said unequivocally, no. I think it's clear that his bosses had lost faith in him. The decision, the announcement coming out last night that Larry Scott's tenure is coming to an end in June, a year ahead of schedule, at least a year ahead of the expiration of his contract.
Yeah.
And as Doug Howler pointed out in a panel piece on The Athletic today, about the timing of it, he said, Scott's fate was sealed a while ago. Of the 12 Pac-12 presidents and chancellors who hired him, only two remained. Over the past year, his support inside conference athletics departments flipped directions. With the Pac-12 approaching media rights negotiations next year, it was clear the conference had to make a move. Now, Larry Scott came out in an article with in an interview with Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic, and he paints it a different way. Quote, "I've been thinking about this for a while. When I finally sat down with our board at normal time, this happened very quickly and amicably. It's a good time for the Pac-12 and a good time for me. I've got a lot of ideas about what I want to do, but nothing specific, blah, blah, blah." This goes back to what I told you earlier, and my perception of all of this is that Larry Scott's perception was so skewed on the reality of the challenges facing this conference.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I don't know how you get all this fixed and what it speaks for the future of the league. I was pointed out, it was said to me anyways, this new SEC deal with ESPN is going to be a game changer in terms of there's not going to be a lot of real quality ratings platforms left now for the Pac-12, no matter where they end up. The CBS contract, clearly, CBS would be a clear, easy partner for the Pac-12 to scoop up what ESPN has taken from them, but there's no inclination that CBS wants Pac-12 football as of yet. So the question becomes, how do they fix that? How do they fix that visibility issue? They've done all sorts of things. You know, Pac-12 after dark, 9 a.m. kickoffs during a pandemic, media day in New York City, all that stuff.
Yeah, but, I mean, don't you think, and Pac-12 after dark, it became a kitschy little thing that the conference could hang its hat on, but it was done out of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, the landscape of broadcast television is necessitating kickoffs that are at midnight Eastern time. We better do something to accentuate this as a positive. They had to do it. And sometimes people that stayed up that late to watch Pac-12 football on the East Coast got treated to some pretty wacky stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's not ideal. It's far from ideal.
No, it's far from ideal. And so I think the first thing that has to change is the Pac-12's got to get a playoff team. And obviously the sooner the better. They need to get a juggernaut-ish kind of representative from this conference to show and reestablish a ceiling in the Pac-12, to show that it's possible to have playoff teams. It's not coincidence that the highlight of the Pac-12 was USC's run. I mean, we all know Washington's had a good team at times. We all know that Oregon has had good teams at times, but that USC run with Pete Carroll, that had it all. That had Hollywood, it had big names, bright
Heisman
lights,
winners.
Heisman winners, it had it all. And there's something about that. There's something about a team in Southern California acting like they're all that and how they speak to the rest of the nation. There was a time with Pete Carroll and USC when the powers in the SEC, they were scared of USC. They would not want to be embarrassed by a Pac-12 team. When that Pete Carroll team went out, who'd they blow out in that bowl game? Was it Kansas State? Who'd they blow out in that?
In the Orange Bowl? Iowa.
Iowa.
Yeah.
Okay.
04, I think.
Yeah, there was a time when nobody wanted to get in the way of that team because you didn't want to be embarrassed by a Pac-12 team. I remember feeling it and talking to people. They need a team like that again. And ASU might be that team, depending on what this young quarterback looks like next season, depending on if all these pieces come together for ASU. But that to me is step number one. Get a team back in the conversation, and then you've got to fix all this other stuff. The TV contracts, the spending, the amount of disbursement to schools, how much they allocate to exclusively to the football programs. Keep in mind, I don't know when the smoke and the dust is going to clear from the diminishing and the marginalization of these other Olympic sports. There have been a lot of cancellations. A lot of schools have just canceled a wrestling team, canceled a track. You know what I mean? I don't know what the ultimate fallout of that is going to be and whether it's going to change the philosophy in the Pac-12 to sprinkle the infield generously for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Now that it's coming to an end, you know, there are people that are looking back and say, oh, what was the biggest misstep? Everybody will point to the Pac-12 network fiasco, which continues to be a huge challenge for this conference moving forward. But in that same piece that I referenced, that panel piece from writers around the Pac-12 on The Athletic,
mm-hmm.
The best thing that Larry Scott did, a lot of votes for moving the Pac-12 basketball tournament to Las Vegas. Do you remember, and I'll agree with that, I think that was a good move, and initially I was like, well, that's weird. There's no team in Las Vegas in the Pac-12. Why are they doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Las Vegas, when times are normal, becomes a college basketball mecca of sorts mm-hmm. in late February, early March with all the conference tournaments.
Absolutely.
It had a feel. When they put it, you know, it used to be at the Staples Center, it felt like such a second-rate afterthought of a tournament, didn't mm-hmm. it? So mm-hmm. I do agree with that. But, you know, and outside of the expansion efforts, which happened very early in his tenure, there's not a whole lot to look at and say, wow, they're in a better place. And I read one article today that said, make no mistake about it, people might say, oh, Larry Scott's leaving the Pac-12 better than he found it. That's not the case in a lot of people's eyes.
I agree.
Who are we going to complain about now?
Well, there'll never be a shortage of that, Vinny.
That's true.
They also moved the football championship to Las Vegas. It just didn't happen.
They didn't get to play there.
Yeah. That's also good.
But again, and that might be a positive move forward, but when they went from the campus sites, because remember, mm-hmm. ASU hosted a Pac-12 championship game in Tempe, and that was pretty cool.
How'd that work out well for them?
Well, they got beat, but there was atmosphere.
Yeah, oh, I know. It was really cool.
But the move to San Francisco was a failure.
When they moved to Santa Clara, it was, I mean, talk about an afterthought. And then they'd play it on Friday night again to get a window.
In a half-full stadium for their championship game.
If they're lucky. Good riddance.
Yeah, thank you.
Coming up.
Thank you.
Coming up next, a disturbing look at the recent draft history of the Arizona Cardinals.
Uh-oh.
My eyes bugged out of my head when I saw it.
Uh-oh.
We'll talk about it next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. From the Opt-In Community Studios, it's Bickley and Murata here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Thanks for tuning in. We appreciate it. We're in off-season mode, at least when it comes to the Arizona Cardinals. There's still football going on. Cardinals not making the playoffs, finishing 8-8 in year two of the Cliff Kingsbury, Kyler Murray tenure. And when you fall short of your goals and when you sputter down the stretch as an organization, you open yourself up for criticism. Certainly that has happened on this show, not only from us, from a lot of our listeners and social media users. There's a lot of frustration with the Arizona Cardinals, but it also causes you to start digging deeper. And somebody did that. His name is Doug Kayad. He writes for NESN, the New England Sports Network, mm-hmm. at NESN.com. And he put together a very detailed, exhaustive analytics piece on draft value. What teams get out of their draft picks. And I'll start, I'm not burying the lead here. They went over a 5-year period from 2016 to 2020
mm-hmm.
in ranking the value rate of all 32 NFL teams.
Yeah. This was not done with Steve Keim in mind.
No,
so
this was,
knows. This was done with Bill Belichick in mind.
Yes, it was. Kind of a look at what the New England Patriots get out of the draft.
Yep.
They don't get much. In that 5-year span, they ranked 26th in the NFL. At a value rate, and I'm not going to pretend I know what that means, but I trust the everything that went into coming up with this formula. They finished 26th. The Arizona Cardinals, out of 32 teams during that time span,
mm-hmm.
finished 32nd.
Dead last, folks. And that is with 1 year in there where he got a good grade because Kyler Murray hit.
The 2019 draft class, the Cardinals are top five mm-hmm. at a value rate because they do have a dynamic young starting quarterback. The teams that got more, Oakland, the Giants, Tampa Bay, and the Washington football team. But that was their highest finish. And if mm-hmm. you go year by year, 2018, Bick, they finished 26th. To refresh your memory, that was the Josh Rosen, Christian Kirk, Mason Cole, Chase Edmonds, Christian Campbell, Corey Cunningham class, which mm-hmm. even they whiffed on their first pick, obviously. They were able to trade him, but you know, Christian Kirk, Mason Cole, Chase Edmonds have all contributed. So, but still, they were 26th that year.
Yeah.
2017, 24th overall.
Mm-hmm.
That was the Hassan Reddick, Buda Baker class. because they really got nothing out of that class other than those two guys.
Mm-hmm. And they got really not much out of Haason Reddick until
last year. Yeah, and his best years might be in another uniform when it's all said and done. The 2016 draft class out of 32 teams, number 32 overall. That was Robert Kimdichie, Brandon Williams, Evan Bain, Marquis Christian, Cole Toner, and Harlan Miller.
That was terrible.
Now, that draft is so bad in terms of value rating that it allows the Cardinals to finish top five 1 year and still finish in dead last.
The study also ranks every general manager who oversaw even one draft during that time. There's 47 different general managers that qualify. Of the 47 in terms of value rate in that span, Steve Keim, 44th. The only one, Bill O'Brien wasn't in charge of football operations that whole span either. So he's dead last out of everybody who's been in charge for the entire five-year span.
Yeah. Okay, so this is this sort of gives numbers and analytics to what I think a lot of us have been saying and a lot of us have been feeling, that the problem in Arizona goes well beyond the head coach. It goes beyond the depth on the team, the lack of it, the lack of foundational pieces drafted that really kind of mitigate the need to go out and make a lot of splashy free agent acquisitions. Yeah, he's not good at his job. And he is still the general manager of this football team going forward, which leads me to say what I said yesterday. From this point forward, this is on Michael Bidwill. He has chosen the status quo when a lot of evidence points to don't do it. And he's choosing that. And if he ends up doing it a year from now, it's going to be a year too late. This is the time to do it. You can argue it's past time to do it. This is the time to do it.
Well, can the argument also be, though, that Keim's tremendous success in trades and averageness in free agency makes up for his draft mistakes?
They have not had a winning record for five consecutive seasons.
That's a fact.
So the answer would be no, you cannot argue that, I guess.
Well, I mean, I think 8-8, this year's record, is kind of a perfect depiction of what you just said, Jarrett.
Mm-hmm.
Very good in trades. How many trades are you able to make?
One.
Middle of the road in free agency. Yep. Bad in the draft. Uh-huh. It evens out. And what does it even out to? An 8-8 record.
8-8 record. Yeah. You give him Carson Palmer. You give him Chandler Jones. You give him DeAndre Hopkins. Those are all home runs. He's a home run hitter with a ton of strikeouts is what he is.
He'd be a great analytic baseball player today.
He would be. He'd fit right in with Major League Baseball 2021.
At about 215 with 45 home runs and strikeout 200 times.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about here. And it's I don't know what they see that I'm not seeing.
I mean,
or that a lot of people aren't seeing.
Yeah, we are talking about a very inexact science. We know this.
Mm-hmm.
If it was an exact science, it would be boring. But even in the most inexact science, there's got to be an equal number of hits and misses. And that's just not been the case.
You can't have this many pressing needs year after year after year. The inability to build a good offensive line by now when he played the position, the inability to pick good wide receivers, that's on him. And then, of course, the string of coaches post Bruce Arians, that's conceivably on him.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing, too, that Michael Bidwill, I think he understands this. There is an issue, or at least there was an issue at one point in time, when you look at the swift manner in which Cardinals have dealt with problematic players and issues and the patience they've shown Steve Keim for off-field transgressions and players. And at the time, I was fine with Steve Keim keeping his job because I'm focused more on the performance element of it all.
Yeah.
But if you're in that locker room, you think there's a double standard, and the double standard, it can be problematic for a football team because they feel like there's two sets of rules. The people in charge have it easy, us not so much. That's the perception, and you don't want that. You can't be a team on a same page rolling into a Super Bowl when you've got that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's pronounced in Arizona, but I'm saying at the time when you took some of the instances and stacked them all together, whether it was Bobby Massey or Michael Floyd or whatever it was, compared to Steve Keim, that was an issue.
Oh, I agree with you. And it's impossible to say right now in the middle of January what is going to transpire in late April, what the Cardinals should do in the draft, because we don't know what free agency looks like. But, I mean, you can have an idea. I mean, we have an idea of the needs. Is there a position that you think needs to be targeted there? I mean, I think a lot of it depends on the future of Patrick Peterson. And actually, even if his future is in Arizona, I think you need to get a cornerback.
You need
pretty
a
high in the draft.
You need a wide receiver. I mean, you need some stuff that a lot of teams want, and a lot of teams don't have. So, yeah, you know how you do it. The smart way to do it is, and drafting for need is a terrible thing to do in the NFL, which I've said repeatedly, because the bust rate in the NFL is really high, mm-hmm. and you don't know who's going to make it, so you can't fill holes with rookies. I saw some stuff from Zach Allen last year that made me optimistic. But when it comes to a cornerback, a wide receiver, team speed, there's a lot of things that have to get better here.
Yeah, I would agree. But man, and seeing those numbers and those picks plugged into this formula, man, it was depressing. Again, if you want to check that out, I could probably tweet it, but you can also find it at Nesson, NESN. .com. Coming up next, during the coaching cycle, there's a certain thing called winning the press conference. Some coaches do it, some don't. We'll tell you one coach that won the press conference today. Next, Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Marotta. Hash marks.
All right. You might not give a rat's behind about the Detroit Lions, but I dare you, Dan Bickley, to listen to this 61 seconds of audio.
Oh, I do now. I'm a closet Lions fan now.
And not feel something about the Detroit Lions. They introduced their new head coach, Dan Campbell, today. And yeah, he won the presser.
This place has been kicked. It's been battered. It's been bruised. And I can sit up here and give you coach speak all day long. I can give you, hey, we're going to win this many games. I can't. But none of that matters, and you guys don't want to hear it anyway. You've had enough of that, so excuse my language. All right? Here's what I do know, is that this team is going to take on the identity of this city, all right? And this city's been down, and it found a way to get up, all right? It's found a way to overcome adversity, all right? And so this team's going to be built on, we're going to kick you in the teeth, all right? And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off, all right? And we're going to stand up. And then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down, all right? And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap, and we're going to get up. And then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing, all right? That's going to be the mentality.
Okay, really? Where do I sign up? Look, there's it, again. That's called. I love the way you set it up. That is called winning the press conference, especially in a city like Detroit, especially in football, where you want to present something to rally around.
Yeah, we might look back a year from now and go, "Wow, that was foolish."
You might.
The Lions led the league in personal foul penalties because of biting so many kneecaps.
Think they're going to actually bite kneecaps.
No, I know.
And neither do you.
And
hard to do that through a helmet.
Well, yes, that is true.
Listen.
And through football pants.
And then later in that same press conference, he said he told his agent, just keep telling the Lions that I'm Matt Campbell, who's the head coach at Iowa State. Maybe we'll fool them into hiring me. This guy could not have come off any better.
That's so fun. I've seen very mixed reviews online from that press conference.
Well, I haven't seen the whole press conference, and I haven't heard every answer. That's the 61 seconds that I've heard.
That clip, just that he's like coming across as like a caveman lunatic.
But that's meathead.
Wait, who's saying that? Who are you seeing saying that?
Across the Twitter feed.
Uh, football people.
Football people, yeah.
But Lions fans?
Media people. No, okay, not Lions fans.
I'm talking about Lions fans.
Yeah, Lions fans are loving it. Yes.
That's what I said.
But this is nothing new. If you know anything about Dan Campbell, you know, when he became the interim head coach of the Dolphins, he...
He did the same thing.
He was all energy.
Yeah, he was.
There was a lot of fire behind him. And I think, you know, that's the reason why he has this job.
Yeah.
And maybe the Lions looked at it that way, too. We've tried different things. We went from a coach who was, you know, kind of boring in Jim Caldwell, but was successful. Then we tried to bring in the next big thing in Matt Patricia. That failed pretty quickly.
Uh-huh.
Let's think outside the box because, you know, he doesn't have coordinator experience. He comes from the New Orleans Saints. You know, if there is ever an organization to throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks, it's the Detroit Lions.
Well, look, if you've been to Detroit, and I've been there many, 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 many times, there's a lot of that pride in which he just kind of spoke that they've got a there's just a vibe there that it's okay. We're sort of like the armpit of it. Nobody gives us any respect, and the Lions have just been so daffy in terms of what ownership has done and what they've placed priorities on. You're right. Dan Campbell's head coach might not work at all, but in terms of saying the right thing to get a fan base stoked,
mm-hmm.
he just did it.
It's also what you would have thought Matt Patricia would be like by looking at him, but he was not at all like that. He was like an analytics, like very smart, soft-spoken guy.
Soft-spoken,
and
yeah.
didn't really do well at all in Detroit.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it not? And don't you hear that and just say to yourself, I wish Cliff would do that once. Just come out once and just say something that got people just revved up.
Can you even,
Actually, in your mind, I would say picture that?
No.
No. If he did it once, it's not authentic anyway.
Well, yeah. I mean, if that kind of thing, that's what I'm just saying that I like that in a football coach. B.A. has that kind of stuff.
Oh,
Sean
I mean,
Payton has that kind of stuff.
I totally agree with what the point you're making. And, you know, fans gravitate toward that stuff, too. It doesn't make you a great coach, but, you know, we want the juicy sound bites. We want the great audio. We want the great press conference moments. You want a leader.
You want something to be inspired by. You want somebody to inspire you.
Yes.
Yes, that's the word. You want to be inspired. That's what it is. And that's a head coach who sounds like he wants it as badly as the fans in Detroit want it.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's an act, even if it's one of those press conferences that you end up looking back 5 years ago and go, okay, let's put that in the vat of ill-fated press conferences right next to, I'm a man, I'm 40.
Yeah, that guy still has that job, by the way.
Yeah, that's right, he does.
And now he's well over 50.
And he still has a mullet. Not that I should talk.
You don't have one anymore.
Not anymore, no.
Head coaching hire made today. The Philadelphia Eagles have hired Indianapolis Colts offensive coordinator Nick Sirianni. 39 years old was the guy. I hadn't really heard much of his name in coaching circles.
This surprised a lot of people.
At all. But he's the next coach with the Eagles. So that means there's one job opening left. The Houston Texans. Last at everything. Is that an indication that they're waiting for Eric Bieniemy? I'm sorry we ran out of time with Adam Teicher, so I wanted to ask that question.
Oh, yeah.
But we did run out of time with him.
Okay.
The Texans dragging their feet, does that mean they're waiting for Bieniemy?
Well, if that seals the deal for Deshaun Watson, then yeah, you hire it. But I don't know if this thing has gone from, this might have started off as Deshaun Watson being unhappy about Eric Bieniemy. It's kind of morphed into something bigger now. It's morphed into people telling Deshaun Watson, this incident doesn't matter. The big picture is you need to get out.
And I'm so glad you brought up Deshaun Watson, and this just hopefully what I couldn't believe because I made the point earlier. He had a great year statistically. Normally, that would be able to carry a team to more wins.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a search, Bick, from every year since 1970. So since the AFL merger into the NFL, every quarterback who started 12 or more games for one team in a season, Deshaun Watson this year. Had the a tie for the 12th best full season quarterback rating. 112.4. Historic stuff. He's tied with Joe Montana, who did it in 89 for a team that went 11-2. In his 13 starts, they went 11-2. Every quarterback except for Deshaun Watson and Dante Culpepper of the Vikings in 2004 won double digits with those type of quarterback numbers. Culpepper was 8-8. But, here's the records of those quarterbacks. 14-1, 13-3, 12-4, 16-0, 11-5, 13-2. It goes down the list. They were 4-12 with a historically great season from their quarterback.
Isn't that amazing?
Who, by the way, took worlds of physical punishment behind that offensive line. Got sacked a ton.
Oh,
he's never going back there.
And I think that's what the issue is now. So it would be kind of funny. And maybe that might be what Houston's dealing with.
Hard to hire a head coach when the head coach doesn't know if Deshaun Watson's going to be there or not. That's
exactly
a big...
Right.
Or what they're going to get for Deshaun Watson if they trade him.
Yeah. And if you're Eric Bieniemy and you've got a job on a team that's in the midst of a dynastic kind of run here, do you leave that job for this sinkhole of the Texans?
Yeah, let's say Eric Bieniemy passed on that opportunity, stayed with Kansas City for another year. Is he going to be less attractive a candidate next year?
Of course not.
They're not going to have a drop-off?
No.
But he's been a very attractive candidate the last 2 years, and he doesn't have a job.
Well, that is true.
And yet, you know what's weird about this? I saw a national football writer, not a dedicated football writer, a guy in Yahoo Sports who penned a piece that said, "What does Eric Bieniemy have to prove? What's holding him back?" It's like people aren't aware of some of these background issues that I wasn't aware
of
them.
I mean, they're all 20 years at least in the past, but they do exist. I don't hear people bring them up anymore. I was unaware of them until last week, basically. I'm not doing any hiring. If he's qualified to be an offensive coordinator for the Super Bowl champion, though,
you think right?
Yeah, he's qualified to be a head coach for another NFL team.
Yes, with you.
Yeah. Coming up next, 1 o'clock, social studies. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.